This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And the heartbleed bug is still in the news.
Really?
People still talking about it. So I thought actually I would this week go back and talk about the guy who actually made the mistake and how that happened. And then transition into how does this whole open software stuff work? How could we actually have something that's so critical to the internet and expect it to be programmed by volunteers? And then we're upset when it's not perfect.
Right.
So I'll talk about that and why we possibly should do something different about it. I thought I would profile this week also a Nigerian startup that, you know, we've been talking to a lot of schools from Nigeria. We just met a university from Nigeria, and that economy is booming over there. It is just taking off, and they're transitioning. So I sort of looked around to see if I could find a startup IT company in Nigeria just to see how things were going. And of course, this week it was a big week for NASA. They found another Earth-like planet out there. Maybe there's life on it. And they also had a big space launch with that SpaceX. And this weekend, I'll talk a little bit later, it will be the weekend of the Google Easter eggs.
Oh, right,
They've revealed all the Easter eggs. In our profile in IT, we're going to talk about the man behind the AOL buddy list.
Okay.
And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty big.
It's huge. I've got to get some help in here.
I notice your upper body. You're bulking up from.
Well, I've had to pump a little iron here to keep this mailbag under control. You know, these are extremely heavy electrons. Oh, also this morning I don't know I'm in a funky mood today. I have a little nerd humor.
Nerd humor.
Nerd
okay, good.
Humor. It's got no value at all. It just makes me happy.
Okay, well that's good enough for me.
We got feedback. We got a Facebook message from James Messick. This was a couple of weeks ago. And he said, have you heard about the recent series of phantom flyaways? DJI drones suddenly decide to take off and fly away. And they haven't really explained what happened. One pilot said his $4,000 drone flew out to sea and was lost in the ocean.
Oh, boy.
In another case, drones were hovering at home a few feet in front of the owner, and suddenly they decided just to vamoose, as he said.
Mm.
Over 15% of the respondents to a poll at RC groups had experienced a similar problem. Doc, you may want to keep yours grounded until there's a software fix. Thanks, James Messick. Well, James, thank you for, you know, worrying about me. I, of course, do have a DJI Phantom drone with it's the Phantom 2 Vision. And these flyaways will occur. Usually.
You say that so matter of fact.
It's happened to me once. And I have to tell you, it's operator error.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, you always fly in manual mode, right?
No. I use a GPS mode.
Oh, okay.
I just basically move the GPS set point around instead of actually, you know, controlling all four blades. So there are two. There was one flyaway problem that actually did require a patch, and this was last year when the drone would get around a cell phone tower or some high voltage lines. There would be interference that was of the same frequency as the control band, 5.8 gigahertz. And so what would happen, if you would lose control of the drone, normally it comes back, auto-hones, and lands where it's going to take off. But if it gets all this noise from this tower, it actually doesn't think it lost the control signal. It still thinks there's a control signal there, and that the control signal is just not telling it to do anything, and it just keeps on flying. and you can't really stop it because it just it's whatever the setting is. So DJI, they notice that whenever it's like it's sort of been taken over through interference with a tower, that the signal that it gets from the tower is unchanged for, you know, minutes or longer. Whereas if somebody's actually flying the drone, the signals tend to, you know, change very frequently. So they observe the signal for about 20 seconds. And if it is unchanged in 20 seconds, they assume that a tower took it over and they go to auto return home. And so that patch was released last year. And I have flown around cell towers and had no problem. Came right home. But here's where the flyaway problem occurs. And I did have one flyaway issue. It's when you start your drone and take off before it's locked in on the six GPS satellites.
That makes sense.
So what I did, I had this one time, I was at home, and I thought, well, why don't I just, you know, I was waiting for the GPS satellites to, you know, to lock up. And so I was playing with it, so I just started the propellers just for the heck of it. And I said, well, I'm not going to take off. No, it's no problem. I'm not going to take off. And then sometimes in order to get it to lock up, I'll turn off the controller and turn it back on again. Just, you know, it makes me feel like I'm doing something and it seems to go faster. So the propellers were on. I turned off the controller. We did not have GPS signal, but it remembered the last GPS location.
So it went to that.
So immediately it took off, and I was under a tree.
Oh no!
And I was sitting here. I was sitting here trying to stop this thing, and I was able to throw down the toggle and get control of the drone in the nick of time. But and then I was able to fly it out from the tree. That after I had that flyaway experience under the tree, that's when I bought those propeller guards.
So which you since taken off?
Actually, I crashed it. They broke.
Oh, I didn't hear that part of the story.
Yeah, right. Let Jim. I don't tell you everything.
I noticed.
So thanks for that. But I think they've fixed. I don't think the patch is required. You just have to have smart operators.
Nah. Well, that's a.
That is a problem. We got an email from Heather. Dear Tech Talk, I've been using a website for online purchasing. When I visit this website, I'll be automatically logged on. Now, last time I visited the site, I was not logged on, and now I can't remember my password. Is there any way to get this automatic log on to work again? Thanks, Heather. Well, many websites, Heather, like the one that you visit, have some kind of auto sign-in or remember me checkbox. And these cause the computer to remember who you are, so you don't need to re-sign every time you go back to the site. And so they do this by leaving a cookie on your machine, and the cookie is actually stored in a subdirectory for cookies. And that cookie is a small file that has all your logon information stored in it. So then the next time you go back to the website looks for that cookie. If it's there, it grabs the cookie, uses the sign-on information that's contained in the cookie, and logs you right back on. So now these cookies could contain personal identifiable information. They could include your account name, could include your encrypted password, or it could be some other unique identifier that allows them to know who you are. Now, if you delete the cookie, all this information is gone. And so frequently you have a cookie cleaning tool like I like CC Cleaner. It's a cheap one. It's, you know, it scans your computer for any kind of malware, cleans up, it actually cleans up your hard drive. And so CC Cleaner has an option for, you know, to delete all the cookies to clean everything up. But they have an option that you can go into CC Cleaner, for instance, and you can have a predefined list of sites that you don't want the cookies deleted for those sites. And that way might be for your email services or for any other thing. So I would think that you probably just deleted that cookie. And so if you're running cookie cleaning software, you might want to, you know, exclude your site from having its cookies deleted. And that's really all that amounts to. Now, as far as the forgotten password, you're just going to have to reset it. You're going to have to ask them to reset your password. They'll send you an email, and then you'll have to go through, maybe answer a question, whose name, your dog or something, and then you can reset your password. And then once you've got the cookie set up, you're set. We got an email from Alex. Someone recently received a picture that I took many years ago in Vietnam when I joined WhatsApp. It's an application, WhatsApp. Now, they received the picture when they joined WhatsApp. Okay. They joined it up, and then all of a sudden they got this picture from my past, like 3 years ago. Now, as it turned out, I joined WhatsApp a few years ago, according to what Alex says. But since I've deleted WhatsApp from my computer, I've deleted that picture. I really don't want people seeing that picture anymore. So what actually happened? How are they getting this picture? Thanks, Alex. Has somebody hacked my account or what? Well, this is what you must have done, Alex. You must have created a WhatsApp account a few years ago and added a profile picture from your trip to Vietnam. And then you forgot about it. I mean, you deleted the app from your iPhone, so you said, okay, WhatsApp's gone. But you did not delete your account. So it's still sitting there with your profile picture. And so when your friend logged onto WhatsApp, they have your contact information. WhatsApp scans their contact list. They said, I know this guy. And it notified them that you were a member of WhatsApp, and then they could see your profile picture. So my advice is, if you don't want that picture seen, go in and delete that picture from your profile in WhatsApp. Now, that means you're probably going to have to reset the password, because I suspect you've forgotten it. Or you could just go in there and just delete your WhatsApp account completely.
I wonder what the deal is with that picture.
I have no idea what that picture was. He didn't, he was very careful not to say what that picture was.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking he might have just joined WhatsApp as kind of a lark and just threw something up there. And then, who knows, maybe it was last year's girlfriend or something. It could have. He didn't really say what it was.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, it was. Now, here's the thing. The reason I highlighted this particular question, it's a matter of digital litter. They always say in the kitchen, clean as you go. Well, in your digital world, you should clean as you go.
And don't forget stuff.
And don't leave all this digital litter around. So if you're no longer using an application, just delete your profile and get rid of it, so you don't have all this litter scattered on the internet, because people are going to find it when they search. So, just Alex, clean up your digital litter when you move on, and you won't have this problem
again. Clean up after yourself.
Clean up after yourself, exactly. We got an email from Nan in Atlanta. Dear Doc, why can't an online service like Gmail or Hotmail or any of the other ones tell me what my password is when I forget it? Instead of forcing me to reset it and change the password, it's such a hassle. It'd be so much more helpful if they just send me my password, and then I could just keep using it and go on my merry way. Thanks, Nyan in Atlanta. Well, Nyan, obviously you don't understand security. Okay, online services typically don't know your password, and if they do know your password, they are using bad practices in security. They actually store your password in a hash format. They don't store the password itself. Now, this one-way hash format keeps your data more secure, because that means if somebody hacks their website, the hash is there, and they've got to basically calculate your password, which is very cumbersome. And so the hash tends to protect your password from hackers, and it also keeps them from logging on, from knowing how to log on to your site and passing your password along. So this is a one-way hash algorithm, and here are some of the properties. Whenever you enter a specific string like your password, it makes a calculation and it computes a very long number, and that long number is always the same every time you put in your password, and that long number is what they call the hash. Secondly, it's very unlikely that any two passwords that you enter in are going to have the same hash output. And the most important thing is, you can't go backwards. So you can't put in the hash into the algorithm and calculate your password. It's a one-way hash. So when you set up your password or your change, if the service takes your password and they calculate the hash value, they store the hash in their database, and then they discard your actual password. Next time you log in, They take the password you provide, convert it to the hash code using the algorithm, compare it to the stored hash code, and if it matches, they log you on. Mm-hmm. So they cannot send you your password, and you should be very thankful that they can't.
There you go.
It was an excellent question. We love your emails. Simply email us to techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll talk about your email on the show, or we'll email you back directly.
And, of course, it's Saturday morning, and you're listening to Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, online at techtalkonline.com and federalnewsradio.com. We'll be back with more right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Barry Appleman. Barry Appleman is recognized as being the father of the AOL buddy list. That, of course, is a list of friends. They call it a friends list now. And it was actually the first time that the internet had something which was called presence. You see, presence. You could look at your buddy list and you get a little light if your friend is online. Mm-hmm. So you could tell if they were present online. In the beginning, people thought it was a little bit, intrusive, and so they called it the stalker list. But eventually, people did like this ability to know who was online. So Barry Appleman was born around 1955 in New York. He received a Bachelor of Science in either business or accounting from Ithaca College in 1976. I couldn't really pin down was business,
business or accounting.
Or accounting? Well, I couldn't tell. It was in the School of Business, and mm-hmm. I'm working.
I gotcha.
I'm working with my sources the best I can. Now, Appleman led IBM's move into TCP/IP. He worked at the Thomas Watson Research Center there in New York, and he worked on this TCP/IP project from 1984 to 1993. And he was the man, and his team are the people that really moved IBM away from the proprietary networking architecture into the world of open source code. He was able to convince IBM of the advantages of TCP/IP, the advantages of open systems, the advantages of open internet standards. And this was not an easy task because this was in the world of proprietary software when Novell had their proprietary networking protocol. And IBM at that time was pushing their own proprietary internet protocol called IBM System Network Architecture, IBM SNA. And all the big guys said, look, we're making money on SNA. Forget about all this cheap open source stuff. But he was able to convince them that they should do that, and it was very good for IBM that he did that. In the end, the work of Barry Appleman proved critical to IBM's adoption of TCP/IP in its early embrace of the internet, and I think that was just a wise move on their part. Appleman and his group were active in the internet standardization, including routing protocols and SNMP. SNMP is Simple Network Management Protocol. This is how you can sort of monitor all the devices, internet working devices on the internet, to see how they're functioning. You can monitor it remotely just using a web page. They still do that to monitor all the Cisco routers, SNMP. He was right in the middle of those initial standards. His team produced TCP/IP protocol stacks for all the IBM operating systems, including OS2, which was, you know, IBM's, you know, effort to move into the PC world. Appleman, before OS2 was crushed by Windows. Appleman and one of his development managers, Matt Korn, managed to get voice and video flowing over IT back in 1987.
Wow.
I mean, this is really predates all of our video, you know, voice over IP stuff with Skype. This was all predating all of that, and they did it in 1987. His Barry Appleman's team, they were real innovators in the beginning of the internet. Appleman was one of the first in the industry to recognize the importance of security. Now, we all know security is a big deal now, but back then, you know, it was sort of like, well, if you're on the internet, we can trust you because, well, that was sort of the all of the.
It was an exclusive club back then.
Yeah,
right?
and all of the software was written in the beginning with a point of view of trust, and, you know, trust just doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
As soon as you get a few million people, you know, trust kind of goes out the window. So he was the first to make Kerberos security system standard for IBM. And what he did, he took MIT's Project Athena, and he converted it into a commercial product by having it ported into all the various operating systems that IBM offered. So they were baking in security into all their systems. So he was there at IBM, really pushing them into the world of open architecture until 93. In 1994, he joined America Online, and he had various jobs there, and it was probably the job that he's most remembered for as chief technology officer. And he was tasked to head up all the AOL server and host development efforts. Now, he authored many innovations and many patents while he was there, including an instant messaging system, a highly scalable email system, ad servers. This was before Google was really making that popular. TCP/IP enabled browsers and many other things. Now, one thing that he had worked on while he was at IBM, which I forgot to mention, was something called Presence. They had a little program when they were running the IBM mainframe, and they could see if somebody was online, and so they could just check and they could chat with them. And so he sort of, in a Unix operating system, created something called Presence, but it was just, you know, at IBM, just kind of an internal deal, not a big deal, and they didn't really think much of it. But when he got to AOL, he started thinking about this idea of presence and user lists. And he got the idea of the user list on AOL because AOL had all these chat groups. And you go into a chat group and you got a list of people that are chatting. So he said, well, why don't we take that chat group list and apply it to any one of your friends who happens to be on the internet. So in 1994... While he was employed at AOL, he hired a contract programmer by the name of Stephen D. Williams. And for 5 months, it was just like a side project. And for 5 months, he was working with Stephen D. Williams to create an early version of the buddy list. And they worked together. They built the prototype. It allowed AOL subscribers to have an early form of the buddy list. Now, in 1995... AIM is what they called it, AOL Instant Messenger. Remember AIM?
Right.
It was launched to all AOL employees, and they were just trying to decide whether they'd like it. And so the employees initially dubbed the buddy list the stalker feature because employees were uncomfortable having their coworkers know when they were online.
Right.
Because you say, yeah, I'm down here working hard, but, you know, you're at the...
And your green light's on or whatever.
Yeah, you're at the bar. You're at the bar doing something. And so they didn't really like that. And so AOL decided to make Appleman's system available to its subscribers in March of 1996. And so remember that, you know, AOL was what they called a walled garden, and they were selling access. And I mean, so their business model was you pay so much a month to have access to the internet, and so they had trouble transitioning into this ad based revenue system. So they initially made it to their subscribers, and then in May of 1997 they opened it up to all internet users, because around that time they got rid of this. You know, they just have all unlimited subscription to AOL. They got rid of the hourly charges, and they just, everybody was on it. And so they released it to everyone. Now, it was extremely popular. It was extremely popular. It was with 10 years later, it had 53 million users by 2007. Now, AIM was not a popular product with the management. Now, here's why. It didn't make any money.
Right.
You know,
sure.
Management said, what good is this? It didn't make any money. So this is an example of what they've now called the innovator's dilemma. Now, AIM had features had all the features that is in WhatsApp. They even had built into the system a peer-to-peer music sharing like Napster. But when AOL went with Time Warner, since Time Warner hated Napster because of all the bootleg MP3s, they got rid of that. But they would have been able to build in video, IP phones, everything we have with Skype, with everything. And this was back in the mid-90s. I mean, they were ahead of the power curve. But the management said, no, we don't make any money on this thing. You know, why are we going to put server space on the thing? And so they it could have been a whole beginning of a new business model for IBM. But they didn't do it, and it eventually tanked. So, I mean, this is one of the problems he had. This became so popular, he wanted to go to the data center and get servers to support it. Well, the management said, "What? Why are we going to take servers to support this thing? We don't make any money on it."
Right.
So his bud was in charge of the data center, and they had just bought a whole bunch of HP computers that they were returning. Something was wrong with them, and so his buddy said, "Well, why don't we just lose these HP computers? They just get lost." And then so they took these quote unquote lost HP computers, put them in the data center. And they were running this whole bootleg operation of AOL Instant Messenger out of that. And they were adding all these features. Management didn't know what was going on. It was a real bootleg operation. But it could have been a precursor. And had AOL really gone after it and built profiles around it and allowed people to share things with it. They already could share video. They could share pictures. They could have beat Facebook to the punch. So I mean, they were innovators. They had innovators in the company, and so Barry Appleman was an innovator at IBM. He was an innovator at AOL, but he just couldn't convince them to do that. Now Barry's listed. I looked him up. He's listed on 107 patents. Now they said that he authored 77 of them because there's a lot of co-authors. So here's a man that. In two different cases, he was able to drive very innovative technology within large organizations and move the organizations in a good strategic direction. He was successfully able to move IBM into open source. He was able to move AOL a little bit in the area of AIM, but not completely.
So Google has GChat, which is basically the same thing as AIM, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does Google's does Google make any money off GChat, or is that just kind of an add-on?
It's just an add-on to get you to, you know, to be available for more ads that they deliver. Mm-hmm. Everything is now ad-based.
Right.
So now the trick is to provide a lot of free services to attract people
to your
ecosystem.
Right.
See, the trick is to get you into their ecosystem, and once you're in their ecosystem, then they own you.
Now, AOL has gone through some rough times. How are they doing? Are they any better off now, or are they still in pretty rough shape?
They're not really innovating.
Mm-hmm.
So much. They're still struggling to try to find their way, and I think people have so many bad sort of bad memories of AOL. Actually, it's sort of tough for them to build up. So
Wow. They're
still in existence, but they're trying to transition to an advertising model, but not as successfully as they would hope. So they're probably, I would say, in the same boat as Yahoo.
Gotcha. Not good.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, there's Profiles in IT. Hope you're paying attention, because in just a few minutes you have a chance to answer a question and win a fabulous prize when we do the pop quiz here on Tech Talk Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, online at federalnewsradio.com and techtalkonline.com. Tech Talk continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the classroom of the airways.
Notice I'm not putting up a fight.
Formerly known as a radio show.
Yes.
Of course, if there's a classroom, there is going to have to be an assessment of learning outcomes, as they say in accreditation. And the assessment method that we use is a pop quiz.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the right answer to the pop quiz, not only will you get an A for the class, you will receive two tickets to fine dine at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room. Now, earlier in the show, I was talking about Barry Appleman, the father of the AOL Buddy List. When he released the AOL Buddy List internally within AOL, what was the nickname that the AOL employees gave it? If you get the correct answer to that, you'll win two tickets to fine dining.
That's right. In order to win those tickets and to give us the answer, you've got to call us right now. The number, if you're calling from west of Ithaca, New York, is 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of Annapolis, Maryland, it's 877-936-9333. Everybody else, the wild card line is 877-936-9333. Or, Doc, you've got another
If you're
way.
Calling in from Nigeria using that great internet infrastructure, you can simply call us on Skype. Connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded directly to the studio.
It's time to play the game, so dial now.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about nerd humor.
Uh-huh.
Nerd humor. Now, this is stuff that, you know, I was just in a funky mood this morning, so these things really seemed funny to me at 4 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a programming joke. A programmer's wife tells him, run to the store and pick up a loaf of bread. If they have eggs, get a dozen. So the programmer comes home with 12 loaves of bread.
He's taking it very literally. Right?
It's written like a programming.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up a loaf of bread, and if they have eggs, get a dozen. And so he got a dozen loaves of bread. Now, at 4 o'clock in the morning, Jim, that just was hilarious to me. Okay, here we go.
Try again.
Here's some more nerd humor. Three guys are on a boat, and they have 4 cigarettes, but no lighters or anything to light them.
Uh-huh.
What do they do? So the engineers, they throw 1 cigarette overboard, and the whole boat becomes a cigarette lighter.
Okay. All right.
Okay, did you get that, Jim?
So you're 0 for 2 now. I get it.
Okay, here we go. Now, here's the thing.
Let's do the Ed McMahon thing. 1 cigarette lighter. Hi-oh. Okay, never mind.
Okay, now here's the third nerd joke, humor. The first Adam said, I think I've lost an electron. The second Adam replied, are you positive?
I don't have a drum roll, so that's the best I could do.
Okay, I'm sorry. I loved those jokes this morning at 4 a.m.
Okay, great. So we are still waiting for a winner. The question once again is, Doc, if you would mind.
We were talking about Barry Appleman, of course, the father of the AOL Buddy List. He released the initial version of the AOL Buddy List internally to AOL, and the AOL employees gave it this derogatory nickname. What do you think that might be? Let's talk about Google's Easter
eggs. Oh, wait a
minute.
Give the number. 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Forget about your whole Skype idea.
I know. Yeah, we'll forget about that.
Okay.
It's not really working for us. Okay, so every Easter, Google has Easter eggs.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is where they have coding or features on the web that they show up and you're kind of surprised. So, for instance, if you search, I'll give you a few of them.
Okay.
If you search for Zerg Rush, ZERGRUSH, Zerg Rush, both caps, in Google, and it will transform your results into a game.
Huh.
Now, to stop your results from being obliterated, you must prevent the letter O from going too far. So you have these O's that start falling down and eating up your search results. Now, another one is you find this in Google's YouTube. If you log into YouTube and you search for a term called Do the Harlem Shake, you'll find a lot of video of people dancing, but all of your results will just start shaking like the Harlem Shake.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you want to know your Bacon number, now many actors are connected to Footloose star Kevin Bacon.
Bacon. Right.
So if you type in any celebrity's name together with the word Bacon number in Google search, you'll find out how many degrees apart they are from Kevin Bacon. Now, here's one. There's an Atari breakout. Now, you have to go into Google Images. And if you go into Google Images and you do a search and you search for Atari Breakout, an Atari game will come up that you can play. It's similar to the original Breakout series. Now, if you type into Google blinking HTML, you'll see all these blinking results coming on your HTML. So. Now, if you go to Google Play Store, this is another Google, and when you're doing search, you just leave it blank and hit enter. It will search for all these unicorns, and all these unicorns come up. So these are a few of the Google Easter eggs, and there are many, many more. So it's kind of a fun thing.
Apparently, you're not connected at all to Kevin Bacon, because I just tried that. And
I have no connection to Kevin Bacon.
All.
No, I've got it. It's no Kevin Bacon at all.
Tell you what, let's take a break. We don't have a winner yet. The question, once again, if you wouldn't mind, Dr.
Yeah,
Schertz.
When they released AOL internally, the AOL Buddy List, the employees had this derogatory name for it. What would that name be?
And again, the number to call is 877-936-9333. Let's try that again. I think I gave you too many threes, which really wouldn't matter. 877-936-9333. 833 to play the pop quiz. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. We will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. We got the SpaceX launched their cargo shuttle to the space station this week. This is really good news for NASA.
Oh, yeah.
They launched the SpaceX Dragon space flight. It's in their Falcon 9 rocket. Now, the astronauts aboard the space shuttle, aboard the International Space Station, will receive all kinds of supplies that they've been waiting for. Now, it turns out the Dragon is sending up almost 5,000 pounds of material, including a spacewalking suit for the astronauts, plus related hardware, and supplies for almost 150 investigations. The Dragon spacecraft is making its third operational cargo mission to the station, operated by its, raised up to altitude by the Falcon 9 rocket. And it's actually good news for the private space initiative that that NASA has initiated. Now, some of the science equipment includes the Veggie System, which is designed to grow leafy vegetables in orbit, so they can, eat healthy.
Right.
There's a system called Opals that will test whether lasers can be used to carry data from space to Earth. There's a T-cell activation and aging that will seek the cause of depression of the human immune system while astronauts are in microgravity. The Dragon carries four commercially HDTV video cameras to see how they're going to operate up there. It carries a pair of legs for Robonaut 2, the humanoid robot that's been going through testing inside the space station.
So he wore out his old legs, I guess.
Yeah, so Dragon's going to dock up there for about a month, and it's going to come back down with 3,000 pounds of completed experiments and other assorted garbage. So that is actually great news for the NASA Private Space Initiative.
Excellent. Doc, we actually have some folks on the line. Let's go, first of all, to Line 2, this is Thomas calling from Bowie, Maryland. Thomas, good morning. How are you, sir?
Morning. How are you?
Good. Doc asked a
question,
please.
Thomas, earlier in the show we talked about Barry Appleman, father of the AOL buddy list. What was the nickname for that buddy list inside of AOL?
The stalker list.
That is correct. You'll win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier dining room or the Karim dining room.
Thomas, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for calling. And hang on a second here. We're going to send you back to Andrew Mitchell, who is our adjunct professor for prize distribution and crowd control. I want to get somebody else on the phone here. This is Linda, who's calling from Greencastle, PA. Linda, I just want to thank you for listening. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you for calling in this morning. We just happened to see your name up there, and you're calling from Greencastle. Are you listening to us on the radio, or are you on the internet listening to us?
I'm on the radio. On my way to Alexandria.
Oh, okay. So you're in the car listening to us. Gotcha. Well, thanks for tuning in this morning. We certainly appreciate that. And I hope you try again to play the pop quiz. And also like to thank Ivan, who's on the phone in D.C. Thanks again, Ivan. Give us a try another Saturday morning here on Tech Talk, which you're listening to on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. More Tech Talk coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University Innovative Approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And let's talk about that Heartbleed bug that's still been in the news. Heartbleed, of course, is a programming flaw in Heartbeat, which is an extension for Open Secure Socket Layer, which is an encryption tool to help websites and online communication systems communicate in a more secure way. That's when you get that little lockbox on your browser you're opening using SSL.
Mm-hmm.
A German computer programmer by the name of Robin Segelman has been outed as the man who made the coding mistake. It's left millions of users and thousands of websites vulnerable to hackers. It's now been fixed, but now there's a whole lot of fix-up work that has to be done because of passwords that were released. The discovery by a Google engineer and Finnish security firm Kodamonikan has prompted experts to call on people to change their passwords to most, if not all, the websites that they subscribe to after the owners have fixed their vulnerabilities. Dr. Segelman is 31. He's from a small town of Olda in northwest Germany, and he's a contributor to the Internet Engineering Task Force, IETF, a not-for-profit global group whose mission is to make the Internet work better. He's attached to the Munster University of Applied Sciences in Germany, where as a research associate in the networking programming lab in the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science, he published a number of papers, including his thesis on strategies to secure internet communications in 2012. He's been writing academic papers and giving talks on security since 2009 while he was still a PhD student. According to his Xing profile, Dr. Segelman has worked for Deutsche Telekom IT, Deutsche Telekom IT services subsidiary for the last couple years as a solutions architect. Now, Segelman denied that this bug was intentional in an interview with Fairfax Media. It wasn't intended at all, especially since he says, I've previously fixed a lot of OpenSSL bugs. I was just trying to contribute to the project. Now, OpenSSL is an open source software project, and by its nature, it invites people to contribute. Nobody owns the code. No one's liable. Willie Cicillo, who's director of the Center for Computer and Information Security Research at the University of Wollongong, said the computer science students are encouraged to contribute to open source and are taught the ethics of the movement. In the case of Heartbleed, the reviewer, Dr. Stephen Henson, a UK consultant, also missed the mistake. Now, Dr. Tuckson, who supervised Segelman's PhD, told Fairfax Media that Heartbleed was a mistake. It was just a small bug, but it had a huge impact. I'd prefer that we use this opportunity to help people make aware that security is an important issue that should be watched. The open source movement is already mobilized to fix the fault, and it's now up to individual websites to create it.
So we've talked about this last week. At some point, we all should change a lot of the vulnerable passwords.
Yeah.
But it's too soon to do that yet, right?
I think probably the patches have been done. Last week, I said wait about a week. I'd say all the patches have been done.
Now
it's time to change the password.
Okay.
Now, but here's the interesting thing. I want to just talk a little bit more about this whole internet security thing. The internet security that we're talking about relies on volunteers.
I didn't know that.
It's volunteers. I mean, he was volunteer. Everybody's got a full-time job. He was volunteering his time, and he made this. And then somebody else was supposed to review it, and then who was also volunteering his time, and they both missed this mistake. So the software that's protecting banks and email, social media,
right,
government is maintained by only a few people, and they're all volunteers. And nobody does it as a full-time job. They do it as a labor of love.
Right.
It's an open SSL. It's a free program that secures a lot of online communications. Experts say that open SSL is severely underfunded and understaffed. The bug wasn't caught recently. The fact that the bug wasn't caught is not too surprising, because the actual source code for OpenSSL contains 500,000 lines of code, all maintained by volunteers.
Wow.
Now, the mystery is not that a few overworked volunteers missed the bug. The mystery is, why hasn't it happened more often, said Steve Marquis, the founder and president, said in an open letter. Weighed against the critical importance of internet security, OpenSSL has a shoestring budget. It's never received more than $1 million a year, Marquis says. The only federal support listed is a single $20,000 renewal contract from the Department of Defense. The company would, and whenever a company wants a certain feature added to it, they'll typically pay OpenSSL a little bit of money to add the feature. Mm-hmm. That keeps the developers busy. But nobody pays just to maintain and audit the code in an ongoing basis. The only full-time person who works for OpenSSL is Stephen Henson, who's a mathematician living in England. In the aftermath of Heartbleed, you would think that companies who used it would make major contributions to the foundation in order to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So the checks came rolling in, and the foundation received a whopping $9,000. I mean, now a few firms provide some help. I mean, Facebook and Microsoft sponsor bug bounties to try to find these things. The Obama administration is now taking a good hard look at how OpenSSL operates to see if there's something the federal government should do. But here's the catch. Nobody wants the government to get too close.
Of course.
Nobody trusts the government. They say they're going to put in a back door. And so I think we need to get a system where the large companies that use this as the core of their business should have a regular contribution to the OpenSSL.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a system that needs to be fixed.
Yep. Doc, let's take a break. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Back with our final segment right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers, here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And this was a big week for NASA. They had the SpaceX launch, and they also had a big breakthrough in the search for life in the universe. Other than on Earth. Using NASA's Kepler Space Telescope, astronomers have discovered the first Earth-sized planet orbiting a star in the habitable zone. That's a range of distance from the star where liquid water might pool on the surface of the planet without freezing or without evaporating. The discovery of Kepler-186f confirms that planets the size of Earth do exist in habitable zones of stars other than our sun. While planets have previously been found in these zones, they were all at least 40% larger than Earth. Kepler-186f is more reminiscent of Earth. Now, we know of just one place where life exists in the universe, on Earth. And when we search for life outside of our solar system, we focus on finding planets that are characteristics of the features that mimic Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, it's going to have to be like us or it can't be life. That's how we view it.
Right.
So they are looking for habitable zone planets comparable to Earth, and is finding even one is a major step forward. Now here's the rub. It's 500 light years from Earth, and it's in the constellation Cygnus. That would be Cygnus. Do you think that's Cygnus or Cygnus?
I think Cygnus, probably.
Cygnus, okay.
The, I don't know why you're asking me.
CYG
you're the US, smart one.
Now, the system is also home of four other companion planets, which orbit the star which is about half the size and mass of our sun. Now, their star is classified as M dwarf or a red dwarf, the class of stars that make up 70% of all the stars in the Milky Way. Kepler orbits the star once every 130 days and receives about a third of the energy from the star that the Earth gets from the sun. So this was a major breakthrough in the search for life
on
another planet.
Now, how do they find it?
They actually are looking for I think the planet does not emit light. So they'll have a star, and when the planet passes in front of the star, there will be a slight dimming.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking for fluctuations caused by the planet blocking the star.
Wow.
So it's an indirect measure.
Amazing.
And they've been looking for that, and that is actually, now here's the thing, 500 light years away, that means if you could fly at the speed of light, which was almost impossible, or I would say is impossible, it would take you 500 years to get there.
So we'll never know for sure.
We're never gonna know there for sure. So I'll tell you the things at Stratford are quite interesting in terms of how we teach. I just want to sort of briefly talk about it. We've actually switched to something where all of our courses are really project based, because there's nothing worse than sitting in and just doing a lecture. But if you sit and work on a project, then the teacher's the coach, the teacher is the mentor. You actually do stuff that actually relates to what you're going to be doing. And we've discovered that this kind of project-based instruction is particularly effective in IT, particularly effective in business, because then when you finish your education, you actually have something which is useful. And so the employers like to have individuals who are able to problem solve, who are able to think through something they'd never seen before using the principles of critical thinking, put together a plan, and solve a project. And so all of our curriculum is sort of based on that, and it's wrapped around the competencies that employers want. That way, when students get out, they very easily can get a job because they have the competencies that exactly the employers want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, this show has just zipped by. We'll handle the Nigerian startup
Next week.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
And listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu and go to stratford.edu, the website. Check out the programs there and let them know that you've heard about them on Tech Talk Radio.
And if you missed a part of the show, tuned in later, we'd like to hear it again. We will replay Tech Talk in its entirety at 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Happy Easter. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and federalnewsradio.com.
We have baseball on the radio today. It's the Nats and the Cardinals from Nats Park, beginning at 1:05. The pregame starts at 12:30 here on Federal News Radio, so tune in for that, Charlie and Dave. The weather for the game and for the weekend is going to be lovely. It's going to be partly cloudy and nice today with a high in the mid-60s. Right now outside our studios in Northwest, it is 54 degrees at 10 a.m.
Not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News